Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
In 2019, when I was lucky enough to be in Canada, thanks very much to Paul Fromm of CAFE, I had a wonderful week touring Canada, giving talks at various locations. And in one location in particular, one of the big cities, I gave my talk to a bunch of whites, and I also observed these white people that I was talking to. And what particularly struck me when I looked at some of the older, mature white males was their defenselessness. And I came up with the name that I kept to myself of DWUMS, Defenseless White Urban Males. These were nice white people who clearly had spent their entire lives living in the city, functioning in a big, functional, lovely Canadian city, but never realizing all the garbage propaganda that had been put into their heads and how they'd been conditioned just to be rats for the Jews and the rich, just working for these scumbags, these so-called elite, who are in reality a bunch of garbage. And unbeknown to them, among all this elite are lots of Jews who are busy quietly working to destroy the nation from within, as usual. But these particular whites had learned the truth about World War II and about Hitler. So these whites, these urban whites, knew the truth and the reality about World War II and about the Germans. And here I was giving a lecture about the racial wars that we had had in Southern Africa in the last 50 years. And this is a topic that I want to return to. The topic of race war and future race war, because that's what's coming everywhere. But we in South Africa will be the first. We'll be the first who will have to stand our ground. So as I gave my lecture about racial conflict and the wars which we whites in Africa had fought, etc., I observed these people, and we also spoke before and after my talk. And like I say, the location was very lovely. Everything was very nice, very civilized, very European, first class, nice people. But these people are being visited by yet another horror story that has been kept from them by liberalism. And I must tell you, I kind of felt sorry for these whites because, like I say, quite a number of them were middle-aged and mature people, some of them maybe even in their 50s. And these whites are now realizing that this beautiful city that they live in and all these liberal Jewish fairy tales that they've been told all their lives, that actually this is not true. I suppose that in the same way that I suffered from, let's call it, Jewish shock, when I first woke up and discovered that my Jewish friend, who I think is my friend, but who's actually an enemy, and an enemy agent who's already hobnobbing with our worst enemies, in the same way, these people living in the city are suddenly realizing that the powers that control the city are going to be their enemies. And they are living in the city, and how are they going to survive or defend themselves? So they were all very pleasant, and we had some food to eat, and we had some chit-chat, etc. It was all very nice, but the message to them could not have been pleasant. And I could see in some of their faces that they are completely out of their depth. They have no clue about how to defend themselves or live in a world where the Jews and the elite have managed to get all their tentacles in everywhere, and that very city that they live in, that city can become your enemy, and the rulers of it can become your oppressors, and they hate you, and what are you going to do? Over and above the fact that there are still non-whites pouring in, etc., etc. So I thought about these defenseless white urban males, and it's something that I thought about a lot because they don't just exist in Canada. There are whites in lots of countries who feel that in those cities and in those countries, they're screwed. But as I'm traveling and I'm meeting people, I speak to people. I sit down and I speak to white people. Sometimes we have dinner, etc. Sometimes we just talk at the end of my talk or before or whatever. And we are busy talking back and forth, and I can get to assess them as human beings, as whites. And I see them. I see many are healthy. They are all mentally stable and fine. I can see that these are healthy, clever white people. They're intelligent white people. They are civilized white people. And yet now they are kind of helpless. And I say to myself, but this is wrong. These people aren't helpless. They shouldn't be helpless. How is it that they are helpless? But the reality is that this hideous Jewish liberalism has moved in on people and created helpless people everywhere. And capitalism itself, the more I observe capitalism, even capitalism right here in Africa, right here in South Africa, I see lots and lots of helpless whites. I live in Johannesburg, which was like the New York of Africa, even in its current state. It's still the New York of Africa. And yet, I observe the whites that are around me, that are in the suburbs, in the shops, when I go shopping, when I have a cup of tea. I look at other whites and I see a similar kind of helplessness, even here in Africa. It's not as bad as in a place like Canada or maybe in Europe, but it's still very bad. It's definitely not acceptable. In many respects, whites are a broken people. Whites are a broken, crushed people who have succumbed to capitalism. They've worshipped the billionaires, the super rich, without realizing that the people that you're worshipping are scum. That a lot of those rich, probably large numbers of those rich, are weak garbage. And then hidden among them are outright enemies, Jews. Your outright racial enemy is somebody you've been strengthening. You've been working to build up someone who actually hates you and despises you. And as they become stronger, they want to crush you. So now, like on that website by Tun Staffel, The Age of Treason, now you've got treason everywhere. Treason is the fashion. And Tun Staffel sums it up, the age of treason. It's treason left, right, and center, and it's at the top. And you can rest assured, Jews are 100% behind it. So whites living in a country where the majority of people are white, where the government is mostly white, where all the major things are white, the police, the army, etc. Yet even in this country, these whites now realize that the police can be your enemy, the government can be your enemy, the government can be spying on you. They realize with horror that actually there's a system out there and that system hates them. And it's a system that they worked their entire lives for loyally without realizing that those people at the top, those people that you are making rich, they are absolute garbage. They're absolute garbage, absolute scum. I grew up on a farm, but I wasn't naturally what you'd call a farm boy. I was actually a very introverted child. I loved to read books. When I got a chance as a youngster, even as a teenager, the first thing I would do is if I could get a book, I'd go and lie on my bed and read a book. I loved books. And I'd go outside from time to time. Go outside, go walking, go doing things. I would even do what I'd call exploring. And I'd maybe even shoot the odd thing now and then. But I wasn't by nature somebody who wants to get out into the open, somebody who wants to go camping, who wants to go hunting. I was more an introverted kind. But even so, growing up on a farm, when I look back on it now, I must tell you, there are a lot of healthy things that came from growing up on a farm. And later when I moved to the city, I've noticed the helplessness of urban people and people who live in cities. And nowadays, I see it as a problem because we've got serious problems coming. And overseas in America and Europe and so forth, they are flooding cities with all these non-white scum, non-whites from Africa, all kinds of failures and garbage and degenerate, worthless scum that are just fleeing from their own hell that they created for themselves, now coming to create hell among whites. And of course, Jews are pumping this forward at the fastest possible pace in their normal anti-white malicious hatred of Western civilization. Whites in the city are so used to all kinds of things being there for them and the rules restricting them so much that whites in the city are not capable of doing the kinds of things that rural and farm people regularly have to do. And the more I look at it, the more I think it's a bad thing. So people are totally dependent on the system. They only know the system, and they don't know and don't have the skills, the physical skills, or the mental ability to look after themselves, to think for themselves. They are just used to being another brick in the wall. For them, everything is a phone call away and someone else is going to do it. Whether it's the police, whether it's the ambulance, whether it's whatever it is, you go somewhere else to get everything done that you need. So you never really get to think about the fact that you're on your own. And you need to take care of many other things. In fact, I think that warfare and conflict is something that most whites actually need some experience of. The more I look at it, the more I think it's actually a good thing. Hitler himself said there should be a war every 25 years. He said something along those lines. But these people have only been indoctrinated with a bunch of liberal claptrap, and they've never been conditioned to even think for themselves, to even think in survival terms. Let me give you an example of some of the helplessness of whites. And it's very, very stupid, actually. And the more I look at it, the more I say to myself, it is so wrong that our people are this weak. And all whites need to be built up and strengthened so that they aren't intimidated when all kinds of nasty things come to their door. But all these things have happened because of capitalism. And capitalism, in many respects, is actually very weak. It's very fragile. And it just creates a bunch of couch potatoes, fat people, lazy people, people who only know how to sit at a desk. And I myself was one of those people. I spent my entire life working as a white-collar worker. But let me give you an example of something that happened the other day to me that will give you an idea of how helpless, utterly helpless, some whites have become, even here. A neighbor asked me the one day if I had a cat. And I said, no, I don't have a cat. And he said, but there's always this gray cat in your yard. I said, no, it's not my cat. It's a cat that comes here. And he said to me, well, that cat is causing a lot of problems. Anyway, a few days later, a woman comes to my gate, a white woman, and she's probably in her 50s, 40s, most likely 50s. And she comes to me and she's really worked up. So this white lady says to me, she says, that cat of yours is coming into my house and it's pissing on my chairs and it's pissing on the bed and it's leaving a stench and, you know, it's causing mayhem for me. A family member who also grew up in Rhodesia with me was with me at the time. So the two of us chatted to this lady. So I say to this woman, I don't have any pets at all. I don't have any pets, and that's not my cat. But I know that cats wander a lot, and cats come here, and they probably come here because I don't have dogs. And there are quite a lot of birds here, and the cats also try to hunt the birds. And I actually quite like when the cats come. And as an aside, I must tell you, more than a decade ago, I went to a great deal of trouble to set up some alarms, some very sort of hodgepodge, hacked together homemade alarms. I did it to try to detect movement outside of my house. My theory was that you can't hear when criminals are walking around outside your house. So I want something that warns me if someone's moving around outside my house. So I came up with an idea and I hacked together my own little homemade alarm system that would detect movement and set off a buzzer and even wake me up at night. And I ran it for many years, and it actually did manage to catch two blacks, a black on two different occasions who were in my yard. In one case, it caught a black that had a gun who was just a few meters away from my house. So it did eventually achieve its result. But in the meantime, it had many, many, many false alarms. Sometimes I was awakened as many times as two or three times a night with false alarms. But I let it go, because I was much more worried about if a criminal gets into your house. You don't want to wake up and find the criminal in your bedroom. with a weapon. You really don't want to go there. So I just took the pain and I used this thing. But all these false alarms that were occurring were the result, I discovered, of cats. Until then, I'd never known about the incredible nocturnal life of cats. And it took me many, many years. At times, I was very angry with the cats, but later I just accepted that it's their nature. And then the other side of the coin is, at least the cats are proving that the system is still working. But it caused me to investigate these false alarms for years. And sometimes I just look out a window. Other times I'd dash out with a weapon and I'd go around my house looking for whoever it might be. And I discover invariably that it's actually a cat. And it gave me a tremendous appreciation for what cats are capable of. I will tell you, there is no land animal that can move like a cat. A cat can't be stopped. Cats go anywhere. Cats climb anything. They do anything the hell they want. And I have a certain respect for cats. One of my favorite memories of a cat was one day when the alarm went off by my kitchen door, and it was round about midnight, and I was looking and looking through various windows, and I just couldn't figure out who had set this off, and I also couldn't find any proof that it was a cat, because many times the cat would be walking around, and I'd be able to see, there's the cat that's just set off the alarm. Anyway, eventually I went outside, walked around my house, still couldn't find anything. And yet I knew that the alarm didn't go off for, it wasn't like a false alarm. It had gone off for a reason. There had to have been something. And I was standing again by my kitchen door, and this was at about midnight. And I was looking around. And then I just happened, and it was a moonlit night, and I just happened to look upwards, and there in the moonlight, sitting right on the top of my roof, because the roof of my house is very steep, sitting right on the top of the roof, at the highest point on the roof, in the middle of the roof, there in the moonlight was a cat, just sitting there, quite happily on the top of my roof in the middle of the night, quite happy with itself. And then I realized, so that's what happened. The cat jumped here, then it jumped there, and that's how it set off the alarm, because it was busy jumping from that wall onto the roof. And that remains one of my most favorite memories of chasing these cats around. And I must tell you, the heights from which cats can jump down, up, the things that they can cross, you won't believe. A cat can go anywhere. It's actually an amazing animal. And some years later, I had a girlfriend, an Afrikaans girl, and she was looking for pets. She wanted a pet that she could keep for herself, that was company, but it wasn't too much work. And she eventually settled on cats. And she had these cats, and her cats would also wander around at night. And these cats can go long, long distances, and they can get up to all kinds of adventures in the middle of the night, far away, and the owners have no idea. Anyway, she sent me photos of some of the things that the cats did. So one day, her one cat comes to her with a half-dead lizard. And the lizard is partly injured. It partly is unable to walk because the cat's been munching on it. But it's still half alive. And so the cat comes and the cat drops off the lizard at her feet. And she did some research into sort of cat psychology. And she realized that the cat is actually bringing her a present. the cat is sort of bringing a thank you to her. So she's kind of freaked out. Here's this half dead, half paraplegic lizard, but the cat means well. It's a kind of a thank you to the owner. And I recall reading that in America, cats kill hundreds of millions of animals every year. Domestic household cats are insane killers. They slaughter like you can't believe. But anyway, I have a lot of respect for cats. I have a lot of respect for their intelligence. And I don't mind at all if they even come and munch the birds. I've actually turned from a bird lover to somebody who says that birds are a nuisance. Sort of a farmer kind of attitude. So if the cats want to come and munch on birds, I couldn't care less. I'm quite happy. And I noticed over the years that cats from my neighbors, as well as from cats from unknown areas, will come and wander around in my yard, either in the daytime or at night. And I now quite enjoy it. But I don't cuddle the cats. The cats are also a bit wary of me, but I'm friendly to them, and it's kind of fun to see a cat just walking around. Plus, I don't want a pet, and I'm happy when they leave later. Let me add another cat story in while I'm at it. There's a small park that's in the center of the houses where I live, and there's also another cat, a little black and white cat, that has wandered into my house, into my property, on a number of occasions. And one morning, I saw this little cat, and the cat ran out of my yard and was heading straight home, which was directly across this park. And as the cat was running, I saw something I'd never seen before, a crow. We don't have many crows here. And this crow was diving. It was diving down and trying to catch the cat. And the crow would dive down and swoop like an eagle, trying to get its claws into the cat. And the little cat was running like hell to just get away from this crow. And the cat made it home. And it was quite a little bit of excitement there. I marveled at the animal interaction as the one tries to nail the other one. But the cat got away, but it was the only time I'd ever seen a crow acting like an eagle. So anyway, I quite enjoy cats. When I used to live in apartments, cats would even visit me from other neighbors. And I remember there was one white lady, she had a really lovely Persian cat. And the cat would come into the apartment, and my mom and I would stroke the cat, etc. Very lovely cat. Later, the cat disappeared, and we believed that somebody had stolen the cat because it was such a fine, well-bred cat. But anyway, I quite enjoy cats, and I give them their space, but I don't worship animals. I don't worship them. I treat them nicely, but I don't worship animals, and I don't regard animals as equal to human beings at all. And we whites, we've got a lot of interactions with animals, lots of interactions with animals. Probably of all the races, nobody interacts with animals as much as whites. So we have quite an affinity for animals, and we've used animals on a vast scale. That is a whole topic. That's a topic for a video by itself, whites and animals. And in Africa, the whites love animals. Sometimes they love the wrong animals. And a lot of these wild animals, they'll kill you if you play with them. They are dangerous. They are not to be toyed with. So returning to the white woman who was at my gate and my family member and I talking to her about the cats. So she says, you know, there's this cat, and this cat always comes from my yard, or it's been seen many times in my yard. I said to her, it's not my cat, and You know, if it's giving you trouble, you know, do with it whatever you want. It's not my cat and I don't care. But I promised her that if the cat ever comes again, that I'll try to see in which direction does the cat go. Is the cat actually a neighborhood cat, a cat that comes from someone else's house quite far away? Or is the cat even a stray cat? So here is this white woman and she starts talking about her problem. She's got a cat. Her cat comes in and out of the house at any time. And then this other cat, the cat that's seen in my yard, it also comes into her house, but then it comes and it starts pissing on things, etc. So I say to her, well, I did once have that cat in my house, but that was because I left the door open. But I don't normally leave doors open. And I left it open and the cat did walk into my house and then I just chased the cat out and I closed the door and I never had a problem again. So I don't leave my doors and windows open for cats to come in. I don't give them that opportunity. So for me, it's not a problem. But she's now talking about how many problems she has, that she's got a cat and she can't close the doors and windows because now it prevents her cat from coming in. And now she's got to keep the, you know, the windows and things open for her cat. But then this other cat also gets in and it's now stinking up her house. You know, what is she going to do? And my family member looks at her and says to her, do you have a pellet gun? With the implication, you know, why don't you shoot the cat? I said to her, you know, can't you call the SPCA? My family member said, can't you lay a trap for the cat? And this woman, she's flustered because she's kind of helpless. And eventually she understands because I say to her, you know, you do whatever you need to do, you know, do whatever you need to do to solve your problem. But it's not my animal and I don't care what you do. But she's sitting and she's caught between all kinds of nonsensical rubbish. She's not willing to close her windows. She's not willing to stop her own cat. She's not willing to kill the cat or do something in this way or that way. She's acting like she's totally and utterly helpless. And she's running around with her make-believe problem as if this problem is a real problem in the world and she's totally helpless. Now, on the farm, when I lived and grew up on the farm, we did whatever we needed to do. If there was some animal that was a pest, we would either poison it or lay a trap for it or just go and shoot it. We didn't let an animal become a thing that dominates our lives. We didn't let a little animal come and totally turn our lives upside down. We are the master. And if it's a problem for us and it irritates us, would affects anything on the farm, and we determined that the best thing to do is to kill this thing, we would kill it. But here's this city woman with her many, many imaginary problems and applying all kinds of morality where it's not due. Yeah, so you got a pet, but how come these pets and other things are ruling your life? There is something wrong in your priorities and you are acting helpless and you've got a bunch of confusion in your head. You've really got an imaginary problem. It's not really a problem. And whites in prior centuries would never have even considered this a problem. You know, there's got to be many different solutions, whether it is to lock your cat in or get rid of your cat or do something else or whatever it is. Poison that cat, put down some meat or something, poison the cat, do whatever, but solve your problems so that you don't lose your mind. Because this is not a real problem. This is an imaginary problem. You are making as if this is a problem that has got like some serious implication in life, which it doesn't have. You should be more worried about criminals getting into your house or something like that than worrying about a bunch of cats or dogs or this or that. So my family member and I, we just kind of chuckled when she left because she obviously was hoping that I would somehow solve her problem, but I'm not the cause of any of her problems, and all her problems are in her head, and she's stuck with all kinds of moral stuff that actually has no value. It is of no importance. You cannot equate the importance of your life and the life of another white person with that of a dog and a cat and a dove and other animals. Those are lower level animals. They are subservient to us. You can treat them well, you can feed them, you can do whatever you want with them, but you mustn't let them own you and dominate you and let your life become hell because of them. If there's a choice between your life and their life takes priority, and whatever's important to you is more important than their lives. But it was amazing to watch her all worked up and flustered and everything by her imaginary problem. I mean, for me, I wouldn't want an animal coming and pissing up my stuff, and I wouldn't like it at all. And I would very quickly solve the problem in one way or another. And for me, even something as simple as closing a door or a window, I really don't think that it's a difficult problem to solve. But it was amazing to see how she feels that she's under all these kinds of stresses when in fact there is no stress, there is no issue. And if we lived 100 years ago, or even 50 years ago, this would have been something that you could solve with no problem at all. I will return to the issue of a softer, gentler world and why a softer, gentler world in the Jewish definition is not what you want. But returning to these urban males and to various people that I've spoken to over the years, I've noticed how whites, even in first world countries, start feeling overwhelmed and fearful of all kinds of things. They are afraid of technology. They're afraid of all kinds of control from above, etc. And they are feeling quite helpless. And you also get people fleeing from the cities. Some people prefer to go and have the rural life, which is very healthy. Though the rural life is not necessarily safer, especially in Africa, the rural life is actually more dangerous. Now, interestingly, the U.S. Army, I noticed in some recent reading that I did in recent months, the U.S. Army is already clearly realizing that there are going to be huge law and order problems in cities in the future. And the U.S. Army is already preparing for urban combat. So all these whites are worried about the city and worried about all the things that they face. But the truth of the matter is that a city is also a place where you can actually get a lot done. And since I live in a city and I've had a lot of time to think about the future, I must tell you that I regard the city as nothing more than a concrete jungle, and it's a place where we will be able to function very well. As a related topic, but I'm not going to go into it here, is that I've done a lot of studying of military history. I love military history, and I'm constantly thinking about the future and the threats that we're going to face as whites everywhere. And a particular area that I've done a tremendous amount of digging into is fighting in cities. And I want to tell whites, don't be afraid of life in the city, even if things go into meltdown. In fact, my advice to whites in South Africa is that fighting in a city is actually going to be the safest and best place to fight in the future. It's going to be safer than fighting out in the open. Whites must not fear losing cities. Just because Jews and other scum have come and corrupted cities, created all kinds of weirdness in cities, does not mean that whites should give up cities. And I feel very strongly about it because cities are very important structures. There's a lot of infrastructure in a city. There's tons and tons of useful engineering and science in a city. These are wonderful constructions built by whites, created by white civilization. Don't let a bunch of scum take it over. And it's actually very easy to control a city. And whites must not fear cities and feel that they need to flee cities. In fact, one of the benefits of a breakdown of law and order in the future is that as much as the Jews would like to destroy whites and turn the system against the whites, or have blacks in cities coming and killing whites, the fact of the matter is that from a military point of view, it's going to be very easy to actually defend and even slaughter others in a city. City fighting, urban fighting, don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. And remember, as liberalism and diversity progresses, it starts collapsing. And you will get more lawlessness, more problems. But there are benefits from lawlessness. And it's not just them who can become lawless. You can become lawless as well. So don't worry about these things. And under no conditions whatsoever, should whites ever consider giving up cities. Every inch of every major city should be fought for tooth and nail. And I can tell you that blacks don't stand a chance. I don't care how big their numbers are. They don't stand a chance against whites. And if they want to fight in cities, there's so much I've studied and looked at. I want to tell you, don't you even worry about it. People inside cities should start developing a military mindset that is appropriate for cities. You work in the city, you live in the city, learn to start working together, learn to start helping each other. You can also engage in secrecy. You can also work with others. You can also learn to spy. You are doing whatever job, you'll have access to certain things and people. Learn to spy, learn to pick up information, share it with other whites. Let whites learn to help other whites covertly and do all kinds of things. Don't be intimidated into thinking that the Western world is going to collapse, all the cities are going to go black, and that all the whites are going to have to flee away from cities, etc. In America, anyway, there's too much white flight, and white flight's a whole other topic as well. And it's yet more proof of the weakness of capitalism. Capitalism is an amazingly fragile system. It's a very fragile system. It's nothing at all like National Socialism, like the stuff the Germans were doing. Hitler and the Germans would never have abandoned their cities to anybody ever. But whites mustn't feel overwhelmed. Just remember that the long term is downhill, and that as things go downhill, everything goes downhill. It's not just that you, the whites, are the only ones that are going to be oppressed. things are going to be breaking all over the show. All this Jewish liberal diversity claptrap, it doesn't actually work, and it will collapse. And as liberalism collapses, you will have opportunities for whites to start looking out for themselves. So start looking at military defense, crime type stuff, and prepare for a future where you will be able to survive. And truly, white men need to think in terms of military, military, military. All of us need to get our minds wrapped around military stuff and be able to defend ourselves. And if we do that, it's going to be very excellent. And there's absolutely no reason why we can't. There's no reason why we can't. Don't give up anything. You shouldn't be surrendering anything. Those cities in Canada, the cities in Europe, the cities in America, they should all become totally white again. End of story. And don't buy into all this other claptrap. In many cases, the problems of whites are a lot like that set of problems, imaginary problems, that the woman neighbor had with the cats. In many cases, it is a case that you are ascribing values and morality to other non-whites, to Jews and other non-whites, as if they have the same value as whites. Don't do that. Don't do that. Our race takes priority. Our people take precedence, period. You're not here to look after everyone else. If they're a nuisance for you, then sort them out. They are subservient to you. We really need to return to being the dominant people that we've always been. I can assure you that all of these imaginary problems, if whites of even 100 years ago had to hear our concerns, they would almost laugh us to scorn. They wouldn't believe how weak we've become. But this is helplessness that's come from liberalism. It's come from a bunch of bunk that's been pumped into your head. You have lost touch with reality. You've imagined the world to be something that it isn't. The world is a much more brutal and rough place. And there are lots and lots of others who are not the same as you. All that matters are our people. Period. Period. It is not our responsibility to look after other people. Other people are lazy, others who are useless, others who are low IQ. They must look after themselves. And whatever they stuff up in their lives, it's not for us to solve. I must tell you, the more I look at it, the more I say, whites must work together with other whites, period. And forget all these others. The benefits that you get from them are very, very minor. It is mostly Jews that are making you imagine that there are all these wonderful benefits. But there are no benefits. It's just a bunch of Jewish crap. Jews are busy completely befuddling and confusing people with all kinds of imaginary things and imaginary morality, etc. Instead, the real morality should be look after your own people. Look after your life, look after your family, look after your children. There was a story the other day that I read in France where a 12-year-old white girl, lovely young 12-year-old white girl, she was, I think, raped and killed by some non-white who then tossed her body into a suitcase. And I looked at this story and I thought to myself, you know what? If I had children and I had to hear that my little girl has been molested and murdered, and after she was dead, they tossed her body into a suitcase or a rubbish dump or something like that, I would blow a gasket. I would want to find who did it and kill him. And I must tell you that those are the kinds of thoughts that people should be thinking. Don't let others come and ruin your life. If you're behaving yourself, if you're doing your own stuff, Don't let other scum come and bring their garbage and their crap into your life to destroy your life or the life of someone close to you. Don't let that happen. Whites have been completely befuddled by Jewish liberal crap and all kinds of nonsensical junk morality that's got no place at all. And it's so bad that whites are busy destroying themselves in order to accommodate garbage. You shouldn't be accommodating the garbage. And those of you who are getting flooded with diversity, Jews are creating huge, huge problems for you. They're creating a nightmare for you for no reason at all. And that's very typical of these Jews. But the only thing that really stands in the way of white survival is not that whites cannot do things. It's a topic I'm going to visit and revisit and revisit again and again. It's not that we are incapable of doing things. It's that there are imaginary reasons, mostly kinds of morality that are being misapplied in the wrong places and it's misdirected. And now you imagine that you need to treat that piece of garbage the same as you would another white. You need to differentiate between your race and the others. And there are rules for our race that come from our civilization. Don't apply those same rules and principles and benefits to others who are clear scum. Jews are enjoying and abusing lots and lots of things that we originally created for ourselves, our own morality, our own civility, our own law and order. We created it for ourselves. Now we are applying it to all kinds of garbage and scum who don't appreciate it, who abuse it at will and do what the hell they please anyway. Honestly, whites need to start thinking very clearly and start thinking about yourself and your race and thinking in reality about safety and looking after ourselves and surviving the chaos that liberalism, Jewish liberalism, has brought to everybody's doorstep. That is just yet another bunch of garbage from these filthy, anti-white, Europeating Jew scum. And no, you're not useless. And learn more about yourself, improve yourself. You will see how awesome we really are. We're awesome. We have just been conditioned by all kinds of stupidity into thinking we are the same as some degenerate piece of shit that crawled out of some fucking jungle somewhere. Don't compare those people to you. They're not the same as you. But what we do need to get out of ourselves is weakness, helplessness, cowardice, and all kinds of timidity, etc. That needs to go. We need to return to being what our ancestors were, what our forefathers were, dominant, strong, determined, etc. Aim to become like that. Be like Hitler's people and you will not have a problem. You won't sit and cower when some freaking dumbass, low IQ scumbag from Africa is busy running around. If you're a true white, in the future, you'll put him in his place in less than 5 minutes.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights, and so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.